Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Tom Dunn sounding in for Sean today, and I'm delighted to welcome into the studio Jean Smullen. Jean,
hello.
Afternoon. Lovely to see you. Fionnuala Jones.
Hi.
Fionnuala, how are you? Good
I'm
to see
good.
You too. And Zara Hederman.
Hello.
Who says you find white wine very hard to swallow.
Yeah, it's not one of my go-to drinks, but I'm convinced Jean will change that for me today.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's going to be very interesting.
She's the miracle worker. Yeah.
You know, we're all intrigued to see how you're going to get on with
I'll
it.
I'll be a white wine convert. Yeah.
Going to make that stuff much more interesting when we get to it. Before we go to you, I just want to read out one or two texts. And we were talking about, I don't know if you heard the AI song. Have you heard the AI
no.
song?
From the girl.
Yeah.
Girly. Yeah.
Yeah. Xenia Monet.
No. Not for me.
She's been signed for 3 million.
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And it's broken into the top 30 radio. It's the first AI song. Entirely AI. AI artist, AI written, everything from Suno. So we're talking about that. I've already been sent AI videos that boomers and some Generation X people don't realise are computer generated. I think people will eventually turn against reels and videos, not knowing what is real or not. Similarly, I think humanity will continue its return to physical albums and live gigs. I would never underestimate humanity's desire for reality. Yet, yes, there may be a surge in interest in AI music, but reality will be victorious in the long run. Also, Kill All Robots. That's from Lorcan in Dublin.
What are they saying? Aren't
robots
they saying,
are going to get Lorcan
they're,
first.
Are they predicting now, like it was similar to the dot-com bang in
yeah.
like 20 or 30 years ago, that the same is going to happen to AI. That seems to be the general thinking, that it's all hype at the moment, but give it next year or the year after and bang. It could
yeah, a lot
gone.
Of money invested in it.
Yeah, so. This is the thing. That's why they, you know, and could you imagine if there was if the same thing happened? I think that would be the wake-up call they all need.
But it is true that the AI songs are starting to creep into the charts.
Isn't there an AI actress as well
yeah.
who's
yeah.
even got her own agent?
Yeah.
Really?
Normal.
Really, lads? Yeah.
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 All ahead of us. And I know the scientists were thinking, what the hell is this, when they saw the carnivorous sponge. It's like a sponge that can attach itself to you with these kind of little hooks and then absorb you into it.
What?
Yeah, it's you have to dive down a bit. 2,000 metres to get to it. So you'll be safe enough. But can you imagine what was going through the poor sponge's mind when the terrifying spaceship with the floodlights came towards it? Game's up. Game is up, it said.
The world has gone mad. Yes. Mad.
So, Jean, you're bringing this to
yes.
some...
I'm bringing Sanity. I'm featuring award-winning wines.
You're going to very interesting places you're going
yeah,
to.
Yeah, actually, I'm just back from Spain. And funny enough, both of these wines are from Spain. That's nothing to do with me, by the way. This is the National Off-License Association every year. This is their 22nd or 23rd year. In fact, I think it could be 24th year. They run this Gold Star Awards and they blind taste over 600 wines. And out of that, they pick... a portfolio of about 60 wines that are all sold, you know, with these medals. You can't miss it. This very distinctive medal on the wine, in, you know, for the next year.
Sure.
This runs from 25 to 26. So, and they have gold, silver and bronze. But the two wines that I've picked today are actually the wines that were voted the white wine of the year, which comes from Rioja. It's a white Rioja and a very modern organic Garnacha from an unspecified region, of which I'll talk about later, more about that later. And both are available in all the independent off licenses all over Ireland, and they'll really be promoting them in the run-up to Christmas. And, you know, what these wines do is it creates a point of difference for the independents. You know, they're wines that have been assessed and judged by people with, you know, WSET diploma and a few of the journalists. And I have to say, I'm one of the journalists who's involved in the final taste-off, for want of a better word. And I have been for a number of years. And, you know, it's like there are wine competitions all over the world, and this is the Irish one. So we're featuring the two top wines from that.
Right. And one of them is kind of mysterious, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's called Larga Historia, which, you
long
know.
Long story.
Yeah, which is long story in Spanish.
And it's very deliberately long story, because it's kind of, they don't want you to know.
Yeah, but it's a whole group of master wines who've got together to create, you know, wines, to take them, the sort of the mystique out of wine and just create really good
wine. Look forward to trying them now.
Absolutely.
In just a moment. Zara, you have a few nice ones for us today, including the return of Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, two big returns. So Daniel Day-Lewis is one with Anemone. So better get that said before I have that white wine.
Get it all set
exactly,
before you have the white wine.
Exactly. So we have his Highland, his favourite return. His son and himself have collaborated on this film.
Right.
is it good?
Well, I straight away am going, really?
Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle, and it's quite, it's unfortunate because there's a lot of talent kind of surrounding this. Naturally, Daniel Day-Lewis hasn't won 3 Oscars for nothing. His son as well has come from like a painterly background, and I feel like that kind of visual component serves this film much better. Like, it looks great, but we'll get into it in a bit, but the story to it is a bit overly ambitious, I would say. And then we have another highly anticipated return, which is Lynn Ramsey. So a Scottish filmmaker who did You Were Never Really Here with Joaquin Phoenix. And also We Need to Talk About Kevin from about 15 years ago. She's back with Die My Love, starring Jennifer Lawrence, Robert Pattinson, has been compared a lot to Gina Rowlands in A Woman Under the Influence. And it's excellent.
And that came about via a book club, didn't it?
Yeah,
via not just Martin Scorsese. Book club, though. Yeah. Imagine in a book club at Martin Scorsese.
Be great crack, especially with these wines if they were paired with them. So yeah, Martin Scorsese loved the book, and as soon as he read it, imagined Jennifer Lawrence in this role.
Well, that sounds great.
So got Lynn Ramsey back.
Very good. I have to ask you all before we go and have a quick word with Fionnuala. Has anyone listened to the Lily Allen?
Of course. Yeah. Tom, of course I have. It's all I've listened to over the last weeks. I tried to get tickets today.
I'm so delighted.
Not a breeze.
That. Have you, Zara? Have you?
I have, yeah.
Jean hasn't?
No, she's not my genre. She's not my A. Like, I, you know, I'm a Jodie girl myself.
I know, so, but like, yeah. I think there's a lot of like female rage on this that I think you'd appreciate.
It's a modern day blood on the tracks.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Okay. It is.
She's giving a hell.
I've seen the reviews. The reviews are amazing. Yeah. Everybody is giving it absolutely incredible reviews. Yeah. You
know? I love it.
Yeah. You know, it's the breakup. What is it about the breakup album?
Well,
it seems to make fortune.
It's the gossip.
It's the gossip. Explicit. It really feels like you've been winded listening to it, and none of the things that happened to Lily happened to me listening. Yeah. Thank God. Yeah. But I was still, it really takes the wind out of your sails. It's very good. Very, very good.
I think John Bishop said she's lived through all that. She had that experience, the marriage breakup, going to London, finding out it's all gone pear-shaped, and still managed to make it into an album and get everything to rhyme and get it into the shops.
Yeah.
That's some achievement.
Yeah, it is.
Poor Christmas as well.
Yeah.
And back touring.
I'd say there'll be, I'm hoping for a European tour because she's obviously doing, because it's all, the album is called West End Girl, she's doing a lot of theatre shows. Yeah. The capacity, I think she maybe underestimated that, or else she wants it for the specific vision. But the tickets flew out the door for any of the UK shows.
So, to the UK, were
you? So I'm hoping, please, girl, come over here. I'd like to see you.
I get the impression this is just going to take off because I think it was great for a start. Very funny, very witty.
But even for anyone kind of into the more nerdiness of it, like, it's very unusual for an album, like a pop album, to kind of grow in streams like day on day after release. And I know people who were tracking it, it just seemed to be getting bigger and bigger, more as word of mouth kind of grew, more and more people were finding it. So, yeah.
So, it's all great news for everyone, apart from one person called David Harbour.
David Harbour.
Who has inspired, it would seem, the entire album. And you'd have to say, doesn't come out of that album exactly, you know, shining.
No, he doesn't. And you know what? I could get into the specifics, but I would say maybe just listen to the album because we are also still pre-Watershed, so I can't get into it.
It's very adult.
But the timing of this is very apt, I suppose, in a way, because Stranger Things season 5, the final season, is coming to Netflix imminently. So you'd imagine it was time to coincide with this press tour that they're all on now.
She couldn't be that cruel.
I mean, well, apparently she recorded, I think, towards the end of last year. So she was, she allegedly might have been sitting on it, rubbing her hands together. Who knows?
So David Barber is back with Stranger Things. He's heading out on a press tour to meet the journalists to find that his ex-wife just released an album.
Yeah.
Explicit details about everything that went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he could be facing journalist questions left, right and centre.
Yeah, no, I will say he did a big interview with, I think it was GQ or Esquire in Spain, and it seemed to be very like top level about leaving the show and stuff like that. I would imagine there was a PR in the room going, none of those questions, see if you play, we're going to scratch them out. But it's the timing just kind of keeps getting worse because there was this viral report, I think it was Daily Mail ran it initially, that alleged that one of his co-stars, Millie Bobby Brown, the star of Stranger Things, had accused him of on-set bullying, and there'd been a full investigation into it that, again, all alleged, but during this last season of filming as well, she required a personal representative on set while they were
finishing this final season. So you have this album that we just mentioned, this report, and then the red carpet premiere was last night. Now, if you watch any of the videos, they're busy mates. It's all coolaboola, as Fran would say in Love Hate. I'm watching Love Hate at the minute, hence why that's the only word that would come to me. But they're like, you think there was nothing happening. And like the Duffer brothers, who are the creators of the show, they're being asked about it on red carpets. And they're saying, you know, obviously I understand, you understand I can't get into personal onset matters, but I will say we've been doing this for 10 years with the cast. And at this point, they're family and we deeply care about them. And Sean Levy has directed a couple of the episodes as well, I think, this season. Kind of said the same thing, like didn't confirm anything, but was very much like, said the reports were widely inaccurate and had been exaggerated. But it's just, this is not the kind of press you want around like your last season of your banner show for your streamer, in which it has such a kind of a rabid fandom and fan base. You don't want to alienate them with stories like this, especially when like David Harbour and the character of Hopper, like he's such a nice, warm father figure. If you've watched Stranger Things, you know, like he's this illegitimate father to all these children as they go on this crazy adventure to the Upside Down. It's a nightmare for the Netflix PR team, I would imagine.
And these two lads, the Duffer brothers, are they brothers? The Duffer,
yes,
they're kind of seen
as
you know, extremely powerful people, aren't they? And the future of you know, their value to Netflix and whoever they decide to write for is huge.
Yeah, it? Well, even this, like, while the show is coming to an end, like, they've just announced an animated series that I think takes place between, I want to say, season 2 and season 3. I think it's called Stranger Things 85. All new voice cast and stuff like that. Like, if they never did anything again, they'd be set for life. But as you said, they have a huge amount of influence in terms of what they turn to next. I'm not 100% sure what they're doing next, but they'll be busy, I would imagine.
You'd be seeing them as the beginning of a very long, successful career is what you would imagine. They need this hold the head.
Yeah.
I have to say, if you're having a good week, bad week section, there's no mystery of who's having the bad week and all this.
Truly, yeah. Poor Kim K as well. Poor Kim K, I say. Poor Kim Kardashian. Not a sentence I would ever utter. Have you watched any of All's Fair?
I don't know if I know how to approach that.
Do you know what, Tom? I'd say don't bother. Do you know what I'd say? Don't bother your head. I've done it, so you don't have to.
Would have even remotely aimed towards anyone like me.
Do you like Ryan Murphy usually?
I'm not sure.
Okay, then no, I would say actually don't bother. He's done like Nip Talk, he's done American Horror Story. It's a very specific style, you know, it's very satirical, very outlandish, very outrageous. And this show, All's Fair, which Kim Kardashian stars in, it's about this American legal firm. They set up their own all-female firm to deal with high-profile divorces, whatever. And like, you've got Sarah Paulson, you've got Glenn Close. You think, maybe this could work. Yeah, maybe Kim won't be the best part about it, but like, surely the rest of them will be able to drag something out of this. Absolutely. Like, the scripting, the dialogue is unbearable. And then you have Kim doing her best, thank God, standing there going, you want a divorce? I don't believe you. This isn't a spoiler, by the way. It's in the top line of the show. I can't believe this. Why would you do this to me? Like, it's just, but it doesn't matter because everyone's talking about how bad it is. Zero stars in The Guardian. It's the number.
Zero stars.
Zero stars. Zero stars. And they do not hand out zero stars lately. So, but she doesn't care. She was on Instagram today saying, have you tuned into the most critically acclaimed show of the year?
The most critically acclaimed.
She's a bit of crack, if nothing else.
She is that.
And slightly self-aware, so.
Are you watching Love Hate to try and get all this out of your mind?
A kind of, yeah. I need something to...
Palate cleanse.
A media palate cleanse, yeah. A media palate cleanse.
It must be great to go back to Love Hate.
It's, oh my God, if anyone needs a winter watch, this is it. I don't know how I missed it at the time.
It?
Well, I didn't miss it, like I was aware of it, but it is so good and it holds up really well. Like really, really well. I'm only halfway through season 3. I kind of know what happens, but don't tell me, guys.
It was one of
don't
the biggest cliffhanger endings, I think, of all time in RT's history. It was just sensational.
I've never watched it either.
You should. You really should. First season is insane, but once you get through that, the rest of it's fine.
Really?
It's
Stuart Carolan.
Yeah.
Writer, genius of that. Also invented a character called Dr. Bill. Some people might remember from years ago on the radio.
Don't worry.
Dr. Bill is out there waiting for you in the darkness.
If you found Dr. Bill's next on my list.
If you have found Love Hate, don't worry, you may yet find Dr. Bill. And then you're really in trouble. After the mention of Dr. Bill, I feel like I really need a drink. So I think we might have a quick break and return with this. Our first movie, Anemone, will be coming up in just a moment. We're going to have, I believe, a glass of white wine, of white Rioja.
We're going to Rioja. And funny enough, last week I was in the most beautiful city called Soria in the north of Spain at a two-day mushroom conference, believe it or not, you know, and all for another day. Very, very interesting. Chefs from all over the world, you know, Michelin star, three-star Michelin restaurants cooking. It's all about the medicinal qualities and everything. It was actually very fascinating. We also went truffle hunting, which was also really amazing.
Would you have, is that normally with a pig or a dog or something?
It was with a dog, but they did have a pig. We went to see the pig, who was so cute, but he didn't do the truffle hunting that day. The dog did it, but it was a bit early in the season because the truffles really aren't going to come good for about another couple of weeks. And it's been a very mild and warm autumn, so they're not quite ready yet. So, but anyway, the dog did find a few, but none of them were worth because it was too early. Okay. They were too immature. But what that brings me to is the Rioja region, because we drove from Madrid to Soria and we passed the majestic Cantabrian mountain range, which is just unbelievable. And that's where the region of Rioja is located, on the banks of the Ebro River, right? Now, we didn't actually stop off in Rioja. We did. We actually went further up into Ribera del Duero this time. But this particular wine comes, it's a white Rioja. Now, the region of Rioja will be 100 years old in next year. In fact, it's thousands of years old. But next year, it'll be 100 years since the first demarcated quality region in Spain was put in place. And it was Rioja, and it was in 1926. Wow. And now most people associate Rioja with red wine. Oh, but Rioja now is white wines, sparkling wines. Everything is possible to make that. And it's so innovative and so incredible at the moment. And the wines that are coming out of Rioja are really unbelievable. So this particular wine is made from a grape called Viura, which is also known as Macabeo, because in Spain, the grapes all have different names in different regions. But in Rioja, the region, it's called Viura. But this is actually very, very interesting because it's got a small amount of Malvasia, Tempranillo, Garnacha Blanca, and Torontes, which is a very aromatic white grape that's very much associated with Argentina. So this is kind of, this is very funky. It's called the Lopez de Haro. That's the producer. And I mean, when you smell it, it's wood-aged white, right? Okay, so if you like Chardonnay, you're going to love this. And all I can say is this is the wine to match with roast chicken and all the trimmings. That's what I would put with this if I was enjoying it.
You can smell it from across the room.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to dip your nose in
vanilla,
far.
Vanilla, but taste it, pineapple. The flavours are just pure pineapple fruit. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Does anyone get pineapple?
A gorgeous.
Sorry, you're still with us.
It's a very. This is a premium wine. It was aged for 18 months in French oak barrels. Just the tropical fruit flavors. It's just pure pineapple coming out of the glass to me. I love it.
Zara didn't fall forward when she had the mouthful.
She's standing still.
It was a strong wrist.
It's so doing Zara, an interesting thing to my mouth, which is I'm enjoying. It's like really like bringing my taste buds.
Yeah,
open or something like. Yep. I'm feeling quite.
You're getting the wood and you're getting the spice, and this isn't an acidic wine by any means. It's wood aged.
So creamy.
It's very big, creamy, exactly. But you've got this gorgeous layer of tropical fruit, and it's pure pineapple. And I mean, it's a big wine, as I say. You know, if you want to do anything, it'll stand up to anything with
really
lots of spices.
Mm.
Very, very gorgeous. Beautiful. 2018, and again. In all the independent off licenses, this is one to put on your Christmas list.
Absolutely beautiful.
And it'll go with turkey as well.
And why are there so few whites, Rioja whites?
There's more and more now. Okay. And funny enough, again, the last time I was in Spain, which was funny enough in July this year, we went to a few producers and they said because of the market demand, they're making more white wines than red wines
all
now
right.
Because globally, white wine is so much in demand.
Sure.
So Rioja have sort of cottoned on to that and they realise, okay, if we don't have a white from Rioja, we're not at the races, okay. You know. So, I mean, that's just a trend and that's a global trend. It's nothing to do with Spain. It's all over the world. The greatest demand now is for white wines.
Right. I have to say, I would regard that as a special one.
That is
really
lovely. Yeah. Yeah, really, really good. Yeah.
Right, time to go to our first movie of which there is great excitement because it's the return of Daniel Day-Lewis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Will we throw straight to a clip? This is a clip from it. Take a listen to this.
Now, Dad prayed for you too. Every day for the rest of his life. If you've gone soft, that miserable bastard. Oh, he prayed. He prayed, didn't he? Prayed every time he took his belt off. Didn't he pray again afterwards? Wet under the arms from the efforts of his labour. Oh, he prayed regular. We learnt our violence from the number one regional champion. And he had some stiff competition.
I know Sean Bean when I hear him.
Yeah.
That's Sean in there, yeah.
Yeah, so he is playing Jem Stoker. So Ray, who is played by Daniel Day-Lewis, his brother. So basically that clip there that we've heard is the first kind of masterclass from Daniel Day-Lewis. So Jem is kind of a very like religious, very spiritual man. And basically this film, the whole premise is Jem has gone out to try and find Ray, who has been self-banished. So he's been living really remotely in the Yorkshire Forest. That's not made clear until maybe an hour in. And I want to kind of dance around why he self-banished himself, because it is with this film, the breadcrumbing of that brings the main tension of keeping you with this film. So this is Daniel Day-Lewis basically telling his brother about one particular inciting kind of event of trauma in his life that his brother didn't know about. And that's the like crux of this film. So interestingly, Ronan Day-Lewis and Daniel Day-Lewis separately had been thinking about making a film about brothers and brotherhood. And they'd actually started writing this in 2020. So I think a lot we've seen Daniel Day-Lewis, like everyone like that is so excited that he's coming back out of retirement.
Absolutely.
But people have been asking him, like, why now did you come out? And he's like, I actually kind of regret saying I retired because I just wanted to do other things. I didn't necessarily want to turn my back. So they've been working on this 3 years after his last film. And the script has been kind of one of the main cruxes, I think, with the criticism. And I can see it. Like, this film is over 2 hours long. It's 2.5.
Yeah. And is it written by his son?
It's co-written between the two.
Okay.
So I kind of feel like the best parts of this film come from Daniel Day-Lewis and come from the two monologues that he delivers. I will say as well, like, Ronan Day-Lewis, at the start of this film, we get this illustration that kind of gives a brief overview of the Troubles in Northern Ireland. And initially you're like, okay, how is this feeding into this film? Like, this is interesting. And that also looms large. You're like, why is this? Like, why is this how we're starting? How is this relevant? And it does become quite, you know, explosive as to why it is the main kind of crux of it. I think that Daniel Day-Lewis has brought the best elements of the screen play to this, because I think that Ronan Day-Lewis, I think he was just trying to be too ambitious with what he's doing, because then we have this other element of it. So Jem has come to like find Ray to bring him back, because there's another element of like male kind of generational trauma where Daniel Day-Lewis's character has a son with Samantha Morton, and he's never met his son, and his son at the moment is having a bit of a difficult time. So Jem's task is to bring Daniel Day-Lewis back.
Okay. Kind of. I hate to say the word that's going through my mind with a lot of this. EastEnders.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
It's EastEnders
the Christmas
set in a forest.
Sit down in a forest.
With a bit of Brothers Grimm.
Yeah.
But there is also, like, I found this quite a frustrating watch because I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I love Samantha
Everyone
Morton.
Does. Everyone does.
I love Sean Bean like that. It looks great. But there's just too many elements. And as I said earlier, he has a painterly background. And he tries to do this thing a couple of times where these really abstract figures and images are presented to Ray. Sure. And you're a bit like, what does this actually add to the film? Why is Ray seeing this? And why do we need to see this? This feels like you've just added on another 5 minutes when, had this been maybe 90 minutes long, it could have been decent.
How often have we heard that?
Too often.
Honestly,
no,
it's
too often.
A recurring theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a little that you are thinking is, would he have gotten, would the son have been given so much leeway if it wasn't his dad leaning in? And
also, we look at the budget for this. The budget for this was 14 million. He also has an incredible team around him. Like, Brian Fordsman did the cinematography, who did like Love Lies Bleeding and St. Maud. So really good at doing, capturing that kind of bleak landscape, which this film has. And it also has a great like Tarkovsky kind of reference to it too. We have Robbie Krillick, who has done the music for this. The sound design is actually quite impressive in it. He's also worked with like Ari Aster on his last couple of films. We know the sound in his films is always great. So I do wonder maybe if Ronan Day-Lewis, I don't want to completely shut the door on him, because I think he does have a visual for maybe a good folk horror or like something that's just not trying to do everything at once for his first project.
If you were forced to a stars out of five situation,
I think it's a kind of classic 2.5.
Right.
It's 50% there.
I'm afraid the texts aren't very nice. An enemy is abominable. Try saying that after a jug of Rioja.
But look, it's his first film. Come on, yeah. Give him, like, seriously, everyone has to start somewhere.
Absolutely. You know,
so. Starting with Daniel Day-Lewis. People asking the name of the White Rioja, please.
It's the, I moved over the page, excuse me. It's the Lopez de Haro Blanco Reserva, and the vintage is 2018. And it was voted White Wine of the Year in the Gold Star Awards.
Brilliant. Another text says, typical Daniel Day-Lewis Borefest. Yeah. Oh. Probably get an Oscar. A lot of controversy there, but not as much controversy as there is in the world of acting, where after enormous demands, Meghan Markle has returned.
Well, I was just about to say, from one retiree to another, she is risen.
Did anyone notice Meghan was gone?
Well, I mean, if you're as obsessed with celebrity and stuff as I am, I was kind of thinking, I think she should have done this a bit sooner in some ways. I think she should have left the reality TV stuff. She's off the back of the second season of With Love, Meghan, which is her Netflix kind of homebody, half cooking, half craft kind of show, which, like, obviously the first season was majorly derided. The second season kind of came and went, which is kind of nearly worse. But anyway, she is coming back. She's a role in this Amazon studio film. It's called Close Personal Friends. We don't know the exact nature of her role, but it's her first one since she starred in Suits, which was 8 years ago. She played Rachel Zane. I will say, when I saw this, I was kind of like mildly intrigued. And then the more I read into it, like, there's a couple of reports saying that she's actually just playing herself.
So it's not really acting.
So then I am kind of like, okay, so we're just doing the same thing again, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we put ourselves out there, you know? She's staring opposite Brie Larson.
Just easing back into it.
Maybe toe in the water, perhaps. Maybe she doesn't want to commit to a...
Hang out some of her big name friends, Lily Collins, Brie Larson, seeing what's going on in their worlds.
Jack Quaid, Henry Golding. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe she's right, actually. Maybe I take it back. Maybe this is probably the better call as opposed to signing up to a Yorgos Lanthimos.
And listen, the old reality things, they haven't gone as well as people thought.
The second season of, I didn't find the first season of the show like particularly egregious. I thought it was like completely fine. I think it served its purpose. I think some people will like it. I think a lot of people hate it just because it's her, which I think we have to be able to separate.
Were people starting to describe it in terms of kind of ASMR, that you just have it on in the background and it'd be like a comforting presence
quite
in the room?
Like, some of it was just a bit, you know what I mean? Like, there were people like, it's not her house and she's making these crass and it's so unrealistic. I'm like, I don't think she's trying to sell you her life. I think she's trying to sell you a life, but not necessarily hers. You know what I mean? And there's, you can critique that, but she's too big of a brand and too big of a person now that it's impossible to separate her and whatever feelings have about her, a lot of which are stemmed in misogyny and racism, if we're going to be for real here. People can't separate those things. And like, it's too difficult. I think this is the right call now to go back to the acting though, because she just... I think the lifestyle-y stuff she can't sell because it's too, she's too far gone and too much has happened, I think.
Okay. Back to, I don't know how you can possibly segue from that to the next part, but, you know,
well,
I'll let you do that.
From something maybe people weren't asking for to something that people definitely were asking for.
Okay, that's good.
We're getting a Miss Piggy movie at long last. How long have we been asking for Miss Piggy to be represented on screen? Why was Kermit getting all the clout? You know what I mean? What does that green freak
have
to do?
I have to admit, the fact that there hasn't been a Miss Piggy movie shocked
me. Isn't it a bit crazy when you say it out loud? But it's coming. We've got Jennifer Lawrence working on it. Emma Stone.
She's on everything.
She is very busy. And I know we're talking about her in the next film as well. She's been promoting this film, and this is where she announced it on the Last Culturistas podcast. So she's working on it. She's producing it with Emma Stone. They're very good friends. I think they're due to star in it together, but like, that's not confirmed. It seems to be in very early stages with this. We've also got Cola Scola, who's working on the screenplay, I'm pretty sure. Cola Scola, incredible star, like the breakout star of O'Mary, which was on Broadway. Just, and you can tell, it has a real reverence for Miss Piggy. Just very funny. Like, I think if I hear this and I go, this is going to be good, I'm quietly confident that they're going to do Miss Piggy justice.
I hope it gets here soon.
I hope so too. Like, it still kind of seems like they're maybe in the midst of it. Like, they said it kind of came about during lockdown, where they were kind of talking about it with friends, where they were saying, Miss Piggy is this feminist icon. What would happen if she got cancelled? Now, I don't think that's the plot of the film, but I am also like, I'd also like to see that film. Do you know?
Absolutely.
How does she deal with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm very excited. No, as
that'd
I said,
brilliant.
Yeah, early stages, but I'm very, very excited for however this transpires.
Wow. We're going to try the red now, if we could, please, Jean.
Let's go. Now, as I say, 2023 is the vintage Larga Historia, long story, basically, a group of masters of wine got together about 5 years ago during lockdown, and they called themselves Citizen Wine, and they wanted to sort of create wines that were to be enjoyed, not revered, as they said. Their wine range comes from Spain, Portugal, Germany, France, and the New World, and everything is organic. So this is an organic Spanish wine made from 100% Garnacha, which we also know as Grenache in France. It's almost the Mediterranean countries. It's the staple red grape of those regions. Now, it's a very juicy, lighter style of red, and I went researching, couldn't find what region it's from, and it doesn't say, not on the website. No, and I went everywhere looking for it, and it doesn't say. So I've no idea. But they do talk about chalk soil, hand harvest, whole bunch, the meal feel, I can't say it properly, technique. Basically, it's carbonic maceration, which is the same process that they use in Beaujolais. It's inert fermentation, and it makes soft, juicy, fruity wine. And they do use it in Spain a bit. And I know from just trying this and tasting it, there is a bit of what we call Cab Mac, carbonic maceration, used in the fermentation process in this, which gives you very soft tannins, loads and loads of fruit, and makes the wine very accessible. So 100% organic. This was voted Wine of the Year 25-26. I think it's best new old world white wine under 20, as far as I know. They break them into price categories or something like that. So you were saying as well.
Lovely,
It's beautiful. It's so mysterious, though. There's so much
raspberries on the nose, lovely herby notes, soft tannin, and
sounds like the Marvel universe.
Expression of the Garnacha grape.
Citizen Wine coming together mid lockdown, industry experts locked in a room. No one knows who they are. They produce this wine. They won't tell you where it's from.
So basically, they're doing what we all did. They're all talking to each other on Zoom. And they came up with it. And then they start ringing around the trade. And at this stage, sure, there was no restaurants, hotels or anything open apart from off licences. So the wine trade was on its knees. There was loads of wine floating around that was available to buy. So they went looking and researching, and they created, because what else were they going to do?
Well, they did so well.
Yeah. And they created now this really, really great profile of wines.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely delicious.
And the fact that this has won Wine of the Year in Ireland, I mean, I'm sure it's going to perform well in all the other competitions all over the world.
What would you have this with, would you say?
Oh, do you know what? Pizza or, it's so juicy and fruity. It's kind of the sort of wine that if you just, you're sitting there and you're watching The Diplomat on Netflix, which is, I was just saying, I'm watching at the moment and enjoying every minute of. And, you've got your, pizza in and a nice glass of wine. Mm. Oh, happy
Beautiful.
Days. Happy
And Jade, you survived just completely, totally fine as well. Again.
I did. Yeah, no, I do like a red wine. But again, mainly with food. I wouldn't really drink it just on its own.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really lovely. It's a great depth to it.
Vanilla, you enjoyed
very
it as
juicy.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah. So deserved winner, and hopefully it'll do very well for them.
Right, time for a second film, and it again is big cast and great expectations around it. This is Die My Love. We'll take a listen to this.
Grace, you know, everybody goes a little loopy the first year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you and Harry have known each other your whole lives. Of course you're going to go a little loopy.
No, I mean you. After a baby. My mother went nuts. Jan lost it. I didn't feel myself for a while. But you'll come back.
A lot of big names associated with this, isn't there?
Yeah, so that was Jennifer Lawrence and Sissy Spacek together in a scene. And then outside of that, we've got Robert Pattinson and Nick Nolte briefly in this. So that actually scene is quite an excellent kind of setup for this film, where Sissy Spacek is talking to Jennifer Lawrence's character, Grace, who's just had a baby. And she's also a writer. So her and her husband have moved from New York to a very remote house in Montana. The baby is about 6 months old, and Grace is really struggling at the moment in new motherhood, also adjusting in a very isolated location. And the thing that kind of spirals her into frustration and into kind of almost a mental breakdown as well is that everyone around her just keeps telling her how difficult it is to have a baby in the first year. And there's a really interesting scene where Grace is like with a therapist and he says something to her about, you know, attaching to your baby, and she just loses and she's like, it's not my baby that's the issue. I love my baby. He's perfect. It's everything else and everyone else around me that's the problem. And part of that as well is because she's a writer in this new kind of world, she has writer's block. She's, her days are really formless. So like, that's a really interesting thing, the way this is shot. Like, she's up throughout any hour of the day. You don't really know what time of day it is in this film, which,
wow,
yeah, well, that's very, in some aspects, yeah,
so that's very close to real life.
Yeah,
and the early babies,
yeah, and there's even like visually as well, there's that painting, Christina's World, you know, the one of the girl who's like crawling on the grass looking towards a house. That's a big visual reference for this. So a lot of people have been saying this is really like A Woman Under the Influence with Gina Rowlands from the 70s. And Lynn Ramsey as well was really adamant that she didn't want this to just be a focus of this as a postnatal depression film. And that, I think, is why Jennifer Lawrence, and Lynn Ramsey herself has said, Jennifer Lawrence is such a natural comedian that she does actually bring levity to this film because it's tense. Like, for the 2 hours, you're really like clutching yourself together. And then like after the press screening, all of us are shook. Like,
really?
Could not say anything to another. And the walk home was somber. Like, what? It was a film.
I don't know
that,
how I feel about that.
It's not a first date film, for sure. But it is definitely a weekend afternoon film because it's really affecting, like, all of the performances. Jennifer Lawrence is incredible in this. There's also Irish interest. So,
Enda Walsh. What's Enda Walsh doing?
So he was part of the screenplay writing team. So he has worked on that. We have Seamus McGarvey, cinematographer, who's done everything from like High Fidelity, yeah, to Nocturnal Animals. He did the cinematography. Wow. And the film looks amazing. Like, that, yeah, rural landscape really adds to just, God, she's so isolated. She's so alone. But there's great shots of her like crawling through long grass that just look, like I said, like a painting. And then, yeah, the cast of Sissy Spacek. Like, I watch her in anything. She's amazing. Absolutely.
I wouldn't be wrecked after this, now would I? You know,
you'll be emotionally wrecked. Yeah,
emotionally,
but
yeah,
worthwhile.
Worthwhile. Better off watching the soccer, no?
I mean, wait for the Miss Piggy movie, maybe.
I can't wait for the Miss Piggy movie. You know that? I'm a delicate child these days. I might wait for that.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
And speaking of lots of things coming to cinema that we've already kind of seen before, a whole slew of these things.
It's sequel corner, baby.
K-pop Demon Hunters 2, Gremlins 3.
Yeah, K-pop Demon Hunters 2, the little K-pop demon that could, huge success story for Netflix after Sony sold it to them. So kind of makes sense that they are doing the sequel. Obviously, animated films take ages, so we're not going to be getting that until 2029. You can tell the kids they can wait.
I can't set my watch that far forward, I'm afraid. Yeah. 2029,
there
knows?
You go. Well, look, if you can wait just a little bit longer, Gremlins 3 is coming in 2027.
Okay.
Steven Spielberg is back executive producing. We've got Chris Columbus as directing, who's obviously done Harry Potter before. I've actually never seen Gremlins. So is that worth, should I, you haven't either? I thought
I don't
you would have, Zara.
So. No.
Long
yeah,
time.
It was
groundbreaking.
Well.
Yeah.
It invented the original Gremlins, led to the creation of the PG-13 rating.
That's right. Oh.
So there you go. Groundbreaking.
It was very,
in a sense.
You know, it was very dark, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was dark. Yeah, yeah.
Well, look, if you don't want darkness, then also coming in 2027, we've got the Cocomelon film. Let's go, girls. Do you know Cocomelon? You're so lucky that you don't know.
There are
Cocomelon.
Times when your universe and mine just seem to be.
No,
you know,
so Cocomelon. Cocomelon is this children's series that's designed to teach life skills through music, but it's all about like, it's all like nursery rhymes, but it's led by this really honestly quite horrifying baby character called JJ, who's leading this troupe of animals. The parents know, shout out to the parents, you're doing God's work, and I hope you don't have to go see this film, but you definitely will have to. It's huge, like it's 4 billion average monthly views on YouTube. Like, this is kind of one of those Miss Rachel TV characters that is now raising children across the globe. So that film is coming in 2027. I'm not really sure about the plot.
The children are grown.
Yeah, they're JJ and the lads are going on a brand new adventure. That's all I know about plot. So lots to look forward to in the coming years.
In the time when my children were very young, it seems to me that the stuff that was really popular was the worst stuff.
Yeah.
Barney.
Now, I won't have a bad word said about that purple
tank
man.
Engine.
Yeah. He's still Tom's tank engine was worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scary.
Rugrats.
Rugrats, fine. I would take that.
Barney, there was no excuse for Barney.
I developed an American accent because of Barney, so there you go.
Just very, very quickly before we go to the end, You didn't mention celebrity traitors at all. Has it been mentioned before?
I did. We were talking about this on air. I was like, I wonder, will Tom want to talk about it? I was a few
I have recorded
behind.
The last episode and I can't describe how hard it is to avoid plot spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
I know, just from the background.
It was. It's already been spoiled for me, but I will catch up and watch. It's been this huge coup for BBC. Now, the normal traitors has been a huge success for the BBC, but I think they're looking at, I think, an overall viewership of like 13 million.
Amazing.
So like the most viewed programme on the BBC since the Gavin and Stacey Christmas special just gone. Incredible view. If anyone hasn't watched and you've managed to avoid spoilers, it's well worth going back watching.
Like, very entertaining.
Very entertaining, especially in comparison to the normal series, which can get a bit intense.
Right. Jean, Fionnuala and Zara, thank you all very much.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.